and welcome to the Digital Dialogue Podcast. My name is Christopher Long, and I'm joined by Alan Gorky here in the 210F studio
at
University Park. And we're also joined today by Michael Brownstein, who is sitting in his apartment in Brooklyn. Is that right, Michael?
You got it.
All right. Windows shut, no sirens coming in, and we're ready to go. Michael is a recent graduate of the philosophy department. I think you probably did it in record time, Michael, 4.5 years, as I recall.
I had some incentive.
Yeah, we should publicize that. And you're going to begin a position as an assistant professor of philosophy at New Jersey Institute of Technology in the fall, so congratulations on that.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I know you're interested in Michael, is the way in which the internet functions as a social practice. And you've written a really interesting paper, and we'll post the abstract to the blog about this, well, the paper's entitled The Background, the Body, and the Internet, and in it you talk about Dreyfus's critique of the internet, and you try to use some concepts from Bourdieu to criticize him. So maybe you could begin by talking a little bit about that project, and that'll get us started.
Sure. Yeah, my pleasure. And thanks so much for having me on. Maybe what I'll do is back up just a teeny bit and just give a brief description of what I'm generally working on, and then hopefully the paper can fit in naturally enough to that.
That'd be great.
So most broadly, what I'm interested in are tacit forms of understanding. So what I mean by that are things like know-how, gut feelings, and motor skills, social skills, sensibility, emotional understanding. An example just from everyday life is the kind of experience we have when we're having a conversation with somebody, and we're utilizing all kinds of skills and understanding about how far away from them to stand when talking, how much eye contact to make, a sort of understanding of whether the person we're speaking with is engaged in the conversation or not. Mm-hmm. And all of those kinds of skills are things that are more or less in the background for us. That is to say, they're not a part of our conscious awareness. Mm-hmm. And interestingly to me, I think it's often the case that the more those sorts of skills are part of our conscious awareness, oftentimes the worse we are at having a conversation. So if I'm thinking about whether I'm being good in the conversation, that can be a bit of a problem.
Right. Doing fine now, by the way.
Well, thank you.
So don't the think way about
that, it. No, I mean, that's an interesting way to get into why I'm interested in the internet, because what I've written on is how tacit understanding, or what I've called practical sense, changes shape and figures into and structures different forms of social interaction. And digital interaction is a different kind of social interaction than most of the philosophers who are interested in tacit forms of understanding have ever thought about.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main reasons for that is because a lot of our tacit forms of understanding have to do with our bodies and the ways that our bodies orient us in both physical and social space. So Hubert Dreyfus is one of the few phenomenologists that has written explicitly about the internet and is interested in its social and political ramifications. And in the paper that you mentioned, I argue that Dreyfus has it right, that we need to be thinking about the kinds of dispositions or backgrounded understandings, know-how, that's created through online social interaction, mm-hmm. and not just the conscious beliefs and desires that people state that they have when using the internet. Mm-hmm. So I think Dreyfus is right in his approach, in what he would call his phenomenological approach to looking at online social interaction. But Dreyfus is a big-time knocker of the value of the internet. He thinks it's a sort of dystopic revolution that's going to undermine the sources of meaning and connection and relationships in the modern world. And I think his critique is more or less antiquated. It was written in the late 90s, I think it's not particularly taken seriously amongst people who write about the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think he really adds, which is an important element that gets lost in some of his cynicism, is the importance of talking about things like embodied understanding and know-how in digital contexts. And the proposal I make in that paper is that Pierre Bourdieu, who's a French sociologist, or was a French sociologist, has a model of tacit understanding, or what he calls practical sense, that's better able to conceptualize the way social interaction may work online without leading us down the sort of armchair cynicism path that Dreyfus does. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because Bourdieu thinks that the necessary complement to any account of practical sense or tacit understanding is what he calls an analysis of social fields. And social fields are areas of historically structured practice. So you might think of the field of philosophy or the field of motorsports, mm-hmm. Or any sort of area of social practice that in which participants need to be able to recognize certain stakes and values and dispositions and ideals that come along with membership into that field. So if we're talking about philosophers, then there would be certain texts that we tend to take seriously, certain modes of discourse, kinds of dispositions. And those tend to act like membership qualifications to social fields. And so what I was proposing in that paper is that Bourdieu's notion of social fields can give us a more adequate way of looking at the development of tacit forms of understanding online. So if we wanted to talk about Wikipedia or something like that, we would not only want to look at what the sort of backgrounded norms are that develop in that social space, but also what kinds of institutional pressures or political pressures generate those norms. And that's the analog to what Bourdieu would call practical sense, what he would call social fields, I mean.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, in that context, it's not really clear to me that when you're looking at online interaction, let's say, the social practices associated with the internet, that you're doing anything different than you would be doing when you're interested in thinking about social interactions in any other kind of media, or whether we're meeting face to face or otherwise. It's just an extension of that. Is that fair to say that's how you would be looking at using Bourdieu, for example?
I think it is, with one important qualification. So I am extending a general methodological approach to the study of the internet, which is not entirely different from the work I've done on political discourse in general, for example. But what I would want to resist, is the idea that online interaction is just the same as embodied interaction. And so a lot of Bourdieu's work is based on the importance of embodiment.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly, like, embodiment is a big change when we're talking about online interaction. But the general answer I want to say is, I think, yes, I don't see digital interaction as something revolutionarily different. I think that tends to be a kind of overblown tendency in some of the literature. There's a guy named Luciano Floridi, I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's written about the internet as the fourth revolution, the previous three being Copernicus, Darwin, and Freud, and now he thinks that we're living in a new era of self-understanding.
Mm-hmm.
That's an informational world, what he calls the infosphere. And I'm not quite sure that I buy that. There's a sort of tentativeness that I want to bring to my methodology.
Right. That makes sense.
The one thing that I thought, you know, I'd bring up, and Chris and I were talking a little bit about this before the podcast started, was this idea of the worldwide electronic agora.
Mm-hmm.
You took out a part of Dreyfus here where he's talking about it being anonymous electronic kibitzers from all over the world who risk nothing, come together, announce, and defend their opinions.
Yeah.
What I'm finding, and what we're seeing in our students at least, is that that students aren't using the internet to replace their social interaction. They're using it to supplement their social interaction.
Mm-hmm.
So people will do things like they'll get on Facebook, they'll leave messages on each other's walls. It was great seeing you at that party. Here's some pictures. Why don't we get together later? But then they still meet. So, you know, I just wanted to see what you thought about that, because it seems in a way that it's becoming, you know, more personal, less anonymous. Or maybe this is everybody's reaction to what was becoming an anonymous, you know, collection of kibitzers, and now the pendulum has kind of swung the other way to be much more personal.
And just to add something to that, I mean, I think the way in which the internet and digital technology is now so integrated into our daily lives, with cell phones and with, you know, having access to computers almost everywhere, that line between sort of your online self and your in-person self, your physically embodied self, is now really blurry.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think that part of Dreyfus's book is a relic of the time when he was writing. Although he may still hold to the opinion, but he's just wrong in that case. There's all kinds of empirical literature to support what you guys are suggesting as well, that shows that the more people use online forms of interaction, the more it becomes indistinguishable from the offline interaction. But there is something, I think, in Dreyfus's statement there about the worldwide electronic agora that I think is maybe relevant to the project that that you're working on, Chris, that I wanted to bring up, which, yeah, I think is maybe, you know, I think I just want to sort of forget about Dreyfus's worries about us living online, and he has this whole critique of the extropians, who were apparently some fringe group at MIT a long time ago, who were going, you know, suggesting that we were all going to live online all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is less interesting than the concept of a public sphere online, which is, in my sense, what motivates a good bit of this digital dialogues concept.
Right.
So one of the things that Dreyfus is suspicious of is the very concept of the public sphere, whether or not it's online or offline.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's right about this, and I'll try and summarize the worry as quickly as I can. The worry is that the public sphere is conceptualized as a place where we can share our positions and our ideas and our values and stances on matters of public policy. Dreyfus's argument is that all of those capacities for position taking and political discourse are parasitic on much deeper forms of social interaction. Very basic things like working together, commuting together, sharing embodied interaction on the street. And that if all we do is valorize a form of discursive communication, I don't want to get too much into the language of deeper, but without a thicker kind of interaction on which those discursive forms of interaction are based, that what you end up with is a kind of deracinated, dangerous public sphere where ideas become mere playthings that we can just throw around without strong commitments undergirding them. And he has a big critique of Habermas and writers who were committed to valorizing the public sphere.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was curious, I guess this is one of the questions that I was hoping to ask you, about whether the notion of Socratic politics captures the way in which social involvement is the basis for discourse, whether it's political or otherwise, if that makes sense as a question.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, one thing I want to be, I guess, clear about is that I don't think I share the valorization of the public sphere in the way that a Habermas or even someone like Hannah Arendt, I think, would. I'm much more interested in thinking about how the public and private is blurred by virtue of some of these technologies, and how that blurring is actually, there's something potentially productive about it.
Cool.
And also there are downsides too, of course. But I guess my vision of Socratic politics is precisely this kind of strange place in which it occurs. It does occur in the public space, in the gymnasia, and in the agora, and different kinds of places, depending on the different dialogues that you look at. But my interest in focusing on Socrates is really the core idea that it's in the concrete encounters you have with individuals that politics happens. And so that politics then is not this sort of something that happens necessarily in Washington or even happening in these valorized public spaces, but they happen in every kind of conversation we have with every individual that we have conversations with. So they happen, you know, in the bedroom with your partner. They happen with your students in the classroom. They happen over podcasts. They can happen over email. They can happen in all kinds of ways. And they happen when we start asking ourselves questions and holding ourselves accountable to our answers. And this is where I think we might have an answer for Dreyfus, because by emphasizing the idea of dialogue, it is, from my perspective, the side of the ability to respond honestly and with integrity to the ideas that are out there, to take them seriously, if they're worth taking seriously, to dismiss them on grounds and for reasons. And so in that sense, part of the idea of this project and even thinking about cultivating excellences that manifest genuine dialogue is designed to get around or to undermine that sense of anonymity, that sense of just the free play of ideas. This is, I think, the internet offers us very interesting ways of holding one another accountable in dynamic ways.
That sounds really fascinating to me. I'm glad that it clarifies the maybe way that I was confusing a kind of concept of a public sphere with Socratic politics.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's you're not wrong to do that, because I think there's certainly a whole tradition of political theorists. I'm thinking primarily of someone like Hannah Arendt who valorized the Greek agora and the sort of agonistic conception of politics. Mm-hmm. I definitely mean, one thing we were talking about in previous podcasts too was the dimension of play and playfulness, and Socrates is always playful, but there's a seriousness to the play. It's not just about
entertainment,
right. And it's not just about ideas that are just thrown out there for the sake of being thrown out there.
Right.
Our newscasts have gone from being a critique or an examination to being entertainment.
You mean our newscast these days on ABC and
yes,
NBC?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. CNN in particular has really disappointed me in the number of people they've hired lately who just seem to be shouting at the camera.
Right.
So the idea there, if I'm following you, would be that play may be a kind of candidate for play understood correctly, I should say, as something that's serious but not too serious. Could be a candidate for the kind of excellence that we should be arguing for needs to be cultivated for political discourse, and that the internet is a potential facilitator for that kind of excellence.
I think play is one. I mean, I think we talked a little bit about openness in one of our first podcasts, and I think a playfulness is part of that. I mean, from my perspective, a certain playfulness is really important, because it reminds us that, you know, we might be advocating for specific kinds of ideas that are very vitally important, and we have our whole selves wrapped up in them in certain kinds of ways. But when we become too dogmatic, we really close off possibilities of relation. And when you close off possibilities of relation in that way, and you become too rigid, then the political possibilities shut down as well.
Mm-hmm. So my question, it sounds fascinating to me. My question would be, what sort of practical competency is required by an excellence like play, as it would manifest online in particular? Not that you would need to know an answer to that now, but that I think trying to sort of bring it into the question about what I'm trying to bring to this conversation.
Well, talk a little bit more about what you mean by practical competency, because when you first said that, I thought, okay, well, you know, there's certain set of skills I need to know how to do, like to record a podcast and to send an email, but you mean different. You mean other aspects.
Yeah, I think I mean something more akin to like the kind of skill one needs to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there are a whole host of skills that we may not be able to specify as rules, but they're more like dispositions,
right,
that are required by day-to-day social interaction in an embodied form, and that I would be happy to thematize in the same way that you described Socratic politics, then I would be... My question would be, what are the analogous skills that we would want to try and bring to digital interaction to serve the sorts of excellencies that you're describing, like play, and I think sincerity was another one that you had mentioned before.
Yeah, I don't have a worked out system of excellences. In fact, we intentionally sort of are just pulling ideas together, because I don't want to have a systemized, you know, theory of virtues, you know, for digital dialogue. But
is much like the pursuit of justice, right?
Right.
We're hoping that they emerge
as we practice it. I mean, that's the other thing, why we put these podcasts out there, why I'm going to start trying to post things on the blog and maybe do some videos. I mean, we're trying to practice it and see what emerges from the practice.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is very much related to what the approach that you are advocating in some ways, Michael. But I mean, I think just even having this conversation as a podcast, I'm noticing that, you know, I'm and now this is going to be reflecting too much on the practice I'm engaged in probably, but you know, what are we going to do? I notice that I'm trying to give my mm-hmms and other things verbally rather than when I would be shaking my head maybe if we were together in a physical space.
Right.
And I noticed that early on when Alan, who's an expert podcaster and started podcasting with me, that he did verbal cues that were not verbal, but they were auditory cues,
right,
that were nonverbal.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And they come across on the podcast with a kind of intimacy, and there's a kind of give and take. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think following up on what you were saying before about not predetermining what those skills are before you actually try it,
right,
I think that speaks in favor of a kind of ethos of dissemination and openness,
right,
where you would hopefully create a kind of platform for skills to develop through all kinds of creative action that people bring to a kind of forum.
Right.
So I'm thinking of the way, I know you guys in the last podcast were talking about digital videos and the one of the kid after he's at the dentist.
Right.
And you know, there's a lot of writing about the political remix videos, the Obama videos, all that kind of stuff. And clearly all of that was not any one person's idea or driven by any theory about online social interaction. It was a product of lots of people doing creative things for their own reasons.
Right. Yeah, no, it's definitely... that's definitely the case, and I think, I mean, I see, and one of the questions that I wanted to actually talk a little bit about was the way there's simply a different kind of embodiment that happens in this digital medium. I mean, it's not as if you're not reading the tone of my voice and...
We're not watching the volume bars.
Right.
Talk as if it was your person.
Exactly.
Right.
Now, I'm not seeing you roll your eyes or your hand gestures and other things. But, you know, if we had video, we'd be doing it differently. When you do it through email, and email is an interesting, or at least through text, you know, people use these emoticons and other kinds of things to try to get at something that might be missing. So it's not as if there's no embodiment in this digital. I mean, it's different. I think you're right to emphasize
that. But that's a good point, though, because I think people are trying to replace the disembodiment that they have by having the little smiley faces, because otherwise you can't understand sarcasm.
Right.
There's a couple of YouTube people I've been watching, and some of them give sort of quirky commentary about the day in 3 minutes or less.
Uh-huh.
And they're almost exaggerating their animation and their facial expression, and they're popping back and forth between different you know, snapshots and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're purposely trying to engage their audience, their listeners, and you know, they're getting 100,000 plus views mainly because they're so animated and they're so present.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so close to the camera, you know, there is that in film. They talk about, you know, how close and how far away you are.
Right.
You zoom in for your close up. That's when you give the emotional speech.
Right.
And I wonder also if it's important to not simply talk about embodiment online as ways of trying to fulfill or cover over a lack, right? So the sort of smiley face as a representation.